This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Talking Horses. Well, she did it again. Winx the Wonder Horse. 27 wins in a row at Randwick yesterday. We've run out of superlatives. I was there yesterday, and for me, it was an emotional moment. Surreal, almost. Her dominance is like nothing we've ever known. One thing I'm disappointed to say this morning is that I actually think the ATC dropped the ball on embracing the mare yesterday. There was no real fanfare. It was just another race. It may well be her last in Sydney ever. Why didn't they push that point and market and promote the day accordingly? She goes to Melbourne now for a tilt at the Cox Plate. But let's be honest, this may be her last campaign. Now a seven-year-old mare, this ride won't last forever. The marketing team, if that's what you'd even call them, should be ashamed of what they dished out yesterday. I've worked on that side of the fence for many years, and I can tell you that the board and the management that I worked for back then would not have deemed what they put on yesterday as acceptable. Moving on this week's show, we focus on the World Equestrian Games being held in Tryon in the USA. The Australian equestrian team well poised at this point in time. Plus, we'll catch up with race caller Darren Flindell to find out what it's like to call the champion racehorse Winx. And Nature Strip, he's become the latest entrant for the Everest, the star Victorian sprinter. But first, we touch base with Racing Victoria's Jamie Steer on the Regimate issue, which has certainly flared up a lot of opinion in the past week or so.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
The issue of Altrenagest has been a big talking point in Australian racing this week, and Racing Victoria's Jamie Steer joins us on the program to discuss the issue and what essentially it's all about. How are you, Jamie?
I'm well, thanks, Joe.
That's good. Well, this product, firstly, let's clarify the correct name and reference for it. It is Altrenagest, but many more publicly refer to it as Regimate.
Yes, so Regimate's actually one of several products that contain Altrenagest, which of course is used to regulate the fertility cycle of fillies and mares. The actual ingredient, the active ingredient, Altrenagest, is the issue that we're confronted with at the moment. So Altrenagest, on analysis, has been found to contain levels of trenbolone and trendione, and both those are anabolic steroids. So to make things more complex for your listeners, it's not actually Altrenagest itself that caused the problem, it's the anabolic steroids that have been found within the Altrenagest.
Okay. So Racing Victoria's stance is a no tolerance to any positives, whereas Racing New South Wales has moved to introduce a local rule that will be more pragmatic in the instance of any positives produced.
Joe, our position is in line with the Australian rules of racing, which are very clear in saying that anabolic steroids at any level are not permitted to be present in the racehorse at any time. So we follow that position, and that's a position which is also adopted widely internationally, and New South Wales have seen that or believe that the correct approach to address this issue is to address or to introduce the local rule that they have.
So what has really flared this issue up in particular this week is the onset of the Spring Carnival, or it's already underway in Victoria, with a lot of horses from New South Wales crossing the border to compete. Some horses would be on this product, so it suddenly changes the ball game for a lot of horses from interstate, and that has been the point of conjecture for many.
Yes, while identifying the problem, we also went about trying to find a satisfactory alternative or a solution for the trainers out there. And to do that, we went and went back in time, if you like. So we spoke to reproductory vets who had experience prior to Altrenagest being created. And Altrenagest, my understanding, Joe, has only been in existence for 25, 30 years. And, of course, racing and fillies coming into their fertility cycle far exceeds that. So we spoke to reproductive vets that had had experience in handling fillies in those circumstances prior to Altrenagest coming into existence, And based on our conversations with them and the advice that they were able to give us, the satisfactory alternative we put out to trainers is the use of a short-acting progesterone, which, according to the advice we've been given, also effectively controls the cycling of filly.
And just to absolutely clarify, of course, many media focused on the potential of Winx being on this particular product, but she certainly isn't. Is that right?
I'm not able to say certainly isn't, Joe, but what we've done is, as part of the process, we've spoken to what we believe to be a representative cross-section of trainers here in Victoria, and we've also spoken to a number of trainers from interstate. Now, we're not naming those trainers that we've spoken with, but our understanding is that it's very clear to those trainers, including Mr. Waller, that should they wish to race fillies or mares in Victoria over the Spring Carnival, as things stand at the moment, they won't be permitted to use Altranagest.
Jamie, there's varying opinion within the industry and certainly the media, both in New South Wales and Victoria, about this issue. What's been the general tone of the feedback that you've been getting?
Joe, I think it's been mixed, being upfront about it, but on the whole, the trainers that we've engaged with have been understanding of the position Race Victoria is taking. There's obviously several of them that would prefer to be using Altranagest products, but at the same time, they appreciate that it's in contravention of the rules, the Australian rules, to do so. So the majority of the trainers we've spoken to have said to us that thankfully, with us providing a satisfactory alternative, they're more than willing to use that alternative, and they'll keep us informed of how that's progressing.
The main reason why trainers use this product on their fillies and mares is to control temperament better when they come into season, but it can also help their performance to more regulate those seasonal changes.
Yeah, so as I said, the advice we've been given is that progesterone itself is a satisfactory alternative to regulate the fertility cycle. Now, the behavioural changes, Joe, animals are animals, and horses are different. Some of the feedback we've had from some trainers is actually the fillies race better when allowed to come into season, and their temperament in some circumstances becomes a little bit more aggressive, and that's when they perform at their best. So I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, and you know, we'll progress and we'll continue to monitor the situation as it goes forward.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's certainly been an interesting issue this week. Is it starting to sort of die down now, all the controversy that's been attached to it?
Maybe dying down a little in some sections of the media, Joe, but no doubt, people will continue to monitor it, and they will write what they write or say what they say. But our focus is on continuing to work to the best alternative to try and assist the trainers where able to, and at the same time have all our horses race within the rules so that everyone's getting a fair go.
I think it will be forever a debatable topic, Jamie.
You may well be right, Joe.
Well, thanks for bringing us up to speed with the latest on that, and good luck for the Spring Carnival. How's everything been going in your view to this point?
So far, it's early days, but so far the signs are encouraging. I thought last Saturday there were some tremendous performances, and I think, the carnival, as it builds its head of steam, it just does create its own publicity, and it'd be nice, Joe, if they were good stories that we're reading about in the newspapers and hearing about in the media.
Absolutely, and we tell a lot of good stories on this very program, Jamie, or at least we try to.
Appreciate that very much, Joe.
That's Jamie Steer from Racing Victoria, bringing us up to date on the Altranagest issue that's been flaring up this week. Australia's richest race, the Everest, is just around the corner, staged next month at Randwick in Sydney. And the ATC this week put their cards on the table by investing in the Victorian-trained galloper Nature Strip. And the head of Wagering Racing and International from the ATC, James Ross, joins us on Talking Horses this morning. How are you, James?
Very well.
A wise investment, it seems. Nature Strip getting behind him?
Yes. I think we'd run a process over a number of months at the ATC. We We run an expression of interest process, which usually kicks off around around May and June, where we look at as many interested horses as possible. Some of those expressions of interest come from domestic or interstate trainers, and a number of them come from international trainers. So we tend to work through a process there, sort of evaluating as many Group 1 races as possible, and aim to make our decision usually around September time. And it's very exciting. We've landed on Nature Strip, partnering with, you know, one of Australia's leading trainers in Darren Weir, who, incidentally, we partnered with last year to good effect and finished third in the race. So I think exciting things ahead.
What are the attributes of Nature Strip that appeal to you so much, James?
Yes, look, I think from the outset, the Australian Turf Club's always been, as soon as we took a slot in the race, one of our key aims has been trying to find horses which would add a different dimension to the race. Obviously, we try really hard to find a horse from an international perspective, but if one isn't available or doesn't present a better case than a domestic candidate, we land on a domestic candidate. And Nature Strip really has an exciting profile. You know, you can see there he's had eight wins from 11 starts. He's going from strength to strength. He took out the McEwen Stakes at his last start, setting a track record there. He's an exciting, what you call a boom sprinter, really. So to add him into the race, I think, adds a different dimension. And last year's race, you know, the profile of it was raised significantly with horses like She Will Reign and Hoots and adding that different dimension. And we feel that we're really, really bringing it with Nature Strip. We also feel that, you know, we've obviously got Darren Weir, but we've got an exciting group of owners who are a syndicate of people, all from different walks of life and backgrounds. And that was a great part of our partnership last year. And we're seeing syndication being, you know, part of the fabric of Australian racing at the moment. So I think that adds another level of interest, I think, and intrigue around Nature Strip.
Well, that's exactly right, James. And, of course, a syndicated horse won the inaugural Everest last year in Red Zell.
Absolutely. I think seeing Red Zell win and his sort of army of owners, who I think, you know, around 50 in number, was one of the great advertisements of the race. I think when we introduced the Everest, with our partners Racing New South Wales, we weren't prepared that it would be going, raising it to that sort of, or elevated to that level in its first running. So that was really exciting. And having a winner like Red Zell really made the race so accessible to people. It gave great exposure to people who are newcomers to racing, because you had some large shareholders in Red Zell, but some people who were very, very small shareholders, and some of them were their first horse. So he's been a great ride for them. And as one of the favourites again for the race this year, he continues to assist with the race's profile.
He sure does. And so, James, there's only now one slot left for the Everest. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's been an interesting pathway this year. A number of slot holders went quite early in the piece. So, we saw some of those leading slot holders. Red Zell obviously was picked up very quickly. Last year's second place, Get a Vega Magic to James Harron Bloodstock, was picked up around early August. But to see Trapeze Artist, which was a really exciting addition, he was last year's sort of champion sprinting colt. To see him partner with our Aquas Farm, partner with the owners there, was a really interesting step. And I think probably the most exciting of all, when we set out on the aim of internationalising the Everest, we really hoped in the first couple of years we'd have international participation, and to see a horse to the calibre of US Navy Flag fill the Coolmore slot is a really exciting point, because I think he's, I believe, the best performed European sprinter to come to Australia. So for him to arrive is a real achievement, and I think we'll be really satisfied if he can run really well in Everest.
And it's a race that's very quickly gained traction within Australia and beyond in terms of profile.
Yeah, that's correct, Joe. I think in its first year, it rated right up there in the top five sprints in the world. So it really delivered on quality. I think it delivered in general intrigue. I think the relationship between slot holders and ownership groups was a great one. We got a number of characters across sort of both sets last year, and that they were really positive for the race in not only in racing media but in mainstream media. So I think they were sort of key points to the race's success. But certainly the new angle that the race brought in terms of having this slot owner possibility of introducing horses to the race, which isn't traditional compared to most sets of entry conditions for most other group races. I think people found that really, really interesting and got behind it.
Last year and even into this year, James, it's fair to say there was a fair bit of hoo-ha and interstate rivalry about carnivals versus the Everest. The Melburnians getting their noses out of joint with the placement of the race on the calendar. But a lot of that seems to have dissipated now, and people are much more positive and embracing of the concept.
Yeah, I think it was. It's never an easy time to introduce a flagship race in any period of busy racing period across spring or autumn in Australia. So I think that was always the challenge. But from the outset, we attempted to select a race which had a distance and conditions which didn't directly clash. But one of the or a couple of the interesting outcomes out of it were. The boost to national wagering on the day. So I think that was a real positive to see other states benefit from that. But also I think the concept has helped so many other sprint races around the country become part of this process. And we've seen, an unprecedented increase in the level of quality of early spring sprinting races. So we've seen races, listed races in Adelaide or early group races in the Melbourne winter or early spring become really interesting races which high quality sprinters are now participating in. So I think there's shared benefit in the concept as well.
James, there was a huge crowd in attendance for the Everest last year. Based on pre-sales thus far, are you expecting a similar or even larger crowd to attend next month?
Yeah, look, I think we'll be on track for a really large crowd again. We're tracking well ahead of last year, but certainly the concept is now well known. So we certainly have changed the purchase process. I think we'll be on track for a similar crowd in that into the 30s, which will be a really good result. That was the most significant crowd that Randwick had had in over 10 years. So to deliver at that level again. Will be really strong, but we're also mindful of the race day experience that everybody has there. So I think we're on track to achieve both of those again this year.
James, thanks for joining us and bringing us up to speed with all things Everest.
Not a problem, Joe. Thank you.
That's James Ross from the ATC. They've invested their hopes in the Victorian-trained galloper Nature Strip.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
Racing at Flemington yesterday, and we opened the program with a 2,500 metre race won by Jame from the Lindsay Park Racing Team. A six-year-old gelding by Ifraj out of a Rock of Gibraltar mare, Miss Gibraltar. Race two on the program was a black type affair, a listed event over 1,100 metres, won by Chris Lee's Smart Missile filly, Smart Melody. She's out of an Encosta DeLago mare, Sweetest Melody. Race three on the program, a listed race over 1,400 metres, won by Brent Stanley's five-year-old gelding, Violate. He's a son of Sebring, out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Shanther's Girl. Race four on the card, a listed race over 1,400 metres. This was a win and a half, Brutal, from the Hawks team, a three-year-old colt by O'Reilly, out of a Golden Mare Alberton Princess, related to winners Bascule, Talaria and Times Like These, sold for $220,000 at the 2017 edition of the New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sale. Race 5 was the Bobby Lewis, a Group 2 over 1,200 metres. Dothrasic Key successful, an 8-year-old gelding by Mossman. From Snowden Racing Team, he's by Mossman, out of a Flying Spur mare, Volantis. Race 6, the Let's Elope Stakes, over 1,400 metres at Group 2. Won by I Am A Star. Now, a five-year-old mare by I Am Invincible, out of a Dixieland band mare, Star Band, related to winners Band on the Run and Pulsar. Sold through the 2015 English Classic Yearling Sales Summer Book for $40,000. Race 7, the Group 1 Mackaybe Diva Stakes, over 1,600 metres, and Grunts. What a great win this was by the four-year-old Entire, a son of O'Reilly, out of a Van Nistelrooy mare, Rukea, related to winners Addison and King's Man. They paid $220,000 for him at the 2016 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sale. Race 8, the Group 2 Danehill Stakes, over 1,200 metres, won by Godolphin's three-year-old colt, Encryption. He's a son of Lonro, out of an Exceed and Excel mare, Guelph. And Race 9 was over 1,700 metres, the Sofitel Girls Day Out Handicap, won by Darren Weir's four-year-old gelding, Furion. He's a son of Camelot, out of the Shamadale mare, Acquainted. That's a look back at racing at Flemington yesterday. The spring carnival really starting to get into top gear.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
And away they go. Pretty good line too, dropping out to second last. Johnny the Cash Man and Skilled Assassin goes back. Wham! Began very cleanly and leads Cavaliero, followed by Ty Geen and Kaiser Sosa. Further back is Persian Empire, improving out wider. Further back is Union Jews. Johnny the Cash Man makes up ground the fence, followed by Approved Anger. A length and a half away then Merchant of Venice, and further back is Be Good to Your Mother, Miss Cool and Gatter, and at the end is Skilled Assassin. Heading towards the 1,000 metres, Cavaliero took it up, three quarters Persian Empire, two lengths Wham, Ty Geen fourth the inside, Kaiser Sosa fifth out, three deep at the 950 around Union Jews and Johnny the Cash Man. Next Approved Anger, followed further back in the field by Merchant of Venice, who's in the back half, eight off the lead from Skilled Assassin, Miss Cool and Gatter, and at the end of the field is Be Good to Your Mother, who snicks back to the end of the field. So past halfway to the side of the track, Cavaliero in front by a length, Persian Empire, Kaiser Sosa the outside, followed by Ty Geen. Next in the field is Wham, and then came Approved Anger at the 550 from Union Jews, six off the front. Back behind those Merchant of Venice, who's got a bit of cover and is coming into the race out wider now, four and five wide, followed by Miss Cool and Gatter. And behind those horses then is Johnny the Cash Man. So Cavalier out the 300, joined and headed by Kaiser Sosa first of all, but Merchant of Venice and Union Jews coming up the middle. Merchant of Venice at the 200 and Union Jews the two favourites. Miss Cool and Gatter back to the inside. Merchant of Venice just in front of Union Jews. Miss Cool and Gatter at the 50. Merchant of Venice is holding on. Merchant of Venice slugs in but won it. Merchant of Venice beat Miss Cool and Gatter. Two and a half lengths, Union Dews. And they were followed next in the field by Ty Geen and a good finish. Cavaliero behind them from Kaiser Sosa. And then came next to finish Wham, who got tired, from Approved Anger, Johnny the Cash Man, Be Good to Your Mother, Skilled Assassin and Persian Empire has finished a long last.
Three-year-old So You Think colt Merchant of Venice is our horse to follow this week after his very stylish win at Bendigo on Wednesday. Trained by Jason Warren and ridden by Ben Mellum, Merchant of Venice was stepping up in class and distance, trying the benchmark 64 over the mile, and he emerged triumphant. He was a $105,000 Magic Millions National Weanling Sale purchase from the Beamer Thoroughbreds draft for Wattle Grove Thoroughbreds. Merchant of Venice is the second winner from Group 3 winner Veronica Franco, a half-sister by Johar to stakes winners Diamond Haley and Waterford. With his oldest progeny just turned five, So You Think is the sire now of 13 stakes winners, four of them Group 1 winners, including three potential spring stars in Jardento, La Bella Diosa and Suppressor. So You Think stands at Coolmore this spring at a fee of $44,000.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Welcome back to the program. The 2018 FEI World Equestrian Games are well underway in Tryon in the USA. The Australian equestrian team has been performing very well this week. The chef de mission, Chris Webb, joining us on the program this morning. How are you, Chris?
Really well, Joe. Thanks very much. A little bit late at night, but we're getting there slowly.
Chris, it has been, to say the very least, a somewhat challenging start to the event. Firstly, with the fact that a hurricane by the name of Florence seems to be inching closer. What's the latest there?
Yeah, it's been interesting, Joe, to say the least. We've been kept up to date with lots of detail from the emergency services and the relevant authorities, including the organising committee and the FEI itself. Florence is definitely on its way. We understand that the hurricane itself will touch landfall in the next 48 hours or so. We anticipate that where we are at Tryon is some hours from the coast in the mountains of North Carolina. And we envisage that come Saturday morning there'll be a significant amount of rain. We understand that the event itself is going to proceed. Obviously, they're checking it, monitoring it all the time, but with the welfare of the horses in mind and the priority of that, as well as the athletes and the FEI are being cautious but also being positive. So there are lots of plans in place, evacuation plans, safety plans. However, at this stage, we're pushing ahead, which is exciting.
And the competition has been pushed ahead this week in what have been very warm weather conditions, particularly over the last couple of days. And one of the most recent and notable performances by the Australian team was from the dressage riders, Chris, that finished eighth overall in the team competition.
Yeah, no, the dressage team did an exceptional job under the leadership of our chef d'équipe, Deb McNichol, and the four riders really performed very well. The conditions have been challenging, there's no doubt about that. It's been very hot and humid, and with the amount of rain that we've had, the humidity coming out of the ground and also the newly formed surfaces for the competitors to compete on has made it very challenging. But the guys have done a really good job. There was our first rider in Alexis Hellier had some challenges with her horse and managed to, in conjunction with the veterinarians, present her horse really well. And she did a fantastic job under some serious adverse conditions. And she really set herself up nicely as well as the balance of the team. And it enabled our more senior experienced riders, you know, Brett Parbury, Christy Oakley, Mary Hannah, to get the job done for us. So we're really proud of that effort.
Of the group, Christy Oakley, a highly experienced Olympian, was the highest scorer in the end?
Yeah, a real great competitor, Christy. She and her horse, De Soleil, did a fantastic job. They scored very well with a good mark over 70% and really showed a strength in the field and has managed to graduate into the next phase, being the Grand Prix Special, which she'll ride tomorrow here in Tryon. And Christy showed her experience as well as her tenacity with her ring craft and how well she can manage a beautiful big horse, and she really did a good job.
And from a Tokyo 2020 Olympics perspective, Chris, how does that performance by the Australian team position us?
Yeah, the way that the FEI have set up the Olympic qualification in the sport of dressage, the team that finished top in our region, being Group F and G, under the Olympic qualification map, was Australia. So therefore, at this stage, we've qualified for Tokyo with our dressage team. So that's extremely exciting, and it was a job that the guys came to do, and they got it done, which we're really proud of.
There's been some controversial situations arise during the week, Chris, across another discipline, that of endurance, with that particular event being cancelled. Can you explain to our listeners what happened there?
Yeah, no, very unfortunate, Joe, and pretty disappointing. But the right decision, in my opinion, was made, and it's one that we've supported as a national federation through the FEI. So the endurance event started yesterday morning. It's a 160-kilometre race, and it started quite early at approximately 6:30 in the morning. Unfortunately, there was a starting issue where the pack got away early, and unfortunately, the pack had split in one group, was directed in a misdirection, which meant that under the first loop that a particular set of riders were probably short between 10 and 15 kilometres in that first loop. So unfortunately, the FEI cancelled the race in the first outset and decided to reset the race due to a false start. The amendment that they made was that the race would continue in a 120-kilometre format. The conditions throughout the day, however, worsened, and due to the humidity and the occurrences throughout the day, unfortunately, the FEI, under the guidance of the Veterinary Commission, made a decision to cancel the race with the welfare of the horses as an absolute priority. It was unfortunate that the veterinary checks that are in place for the endurance race are quite strict, but all for all the right reasons, and unfortunately that the horses just weren't in a position to be able to satisfy the veterinary assessments, and therefore with the attrition rate that was coming, the FEI felt it was important, and the only decision to protect the horses and the competitors was to unfortunately abandon the event.
Mm. Horse welfare must come first, Chris, but that aside, I'm sure there must be many from various countries disappointed athletes going home from Tryon having not been able to compete in an event that they've spent so long preparing for.
Oh, it's extremely disappointing, Joe, and I think there was absolutely no doubt for those that were at the event, there was a fair bit of emotion around. However, at the end of the day, we all have a responsibility to protect the horses, and the FEI led that and made a decision with consultation, with a lot of science and a lot of fact behind them, and made the decision, the only decision that had to be made, really. As you said, there will be some disappointment. There's a long way to go and a lot of money spent, and a lot of hard work gone into preparing horses for this event. But as we know, we love our horses, and it's extremely important that they're protected.
The eventing competition is underway, Chris, and the Australian team so far after the dressage phase looks in good shape.
Yeah, the two guys that rode today in Andrew Hoy, obviously a very seasoned campaigner, and Christopher Burton, one of our young bright futures, rode very well in the dressage tests. Put us in a good position going into day two, which will follow with our other two team riders in Shane Rose and Emma McNabb, and our individual competitor in Bill Levitt. So the guys did a good job. The conditions were still tough out there today, but the judges were showing good marks and the guys did well. I think there's definitely a long way to go in the competition yet, but a good start. And it's really important for our team in eventing and our Tokyo campaign for medals at Olympic Games for those guys to do really well. So great, we got off to a good start.
Mm. And at WEG, do you hope that the Australian team would be a medal chance at the end of the competition?
I think so, Joe. We've set ourselves a benchmark to do as well as we possibly can. The top six teams in the discipline of eventing from the World Equestrian Games will qualify to Tokyo. That is our goal. However, it's hard to keep those guys back. They'll want to get on the podium and do as well as they possibly can. All four of those, that group, are strong and fierce competitors, and this is the world stage. They won't back down at all. So, as I said, it's a long competition, as we know. 3-day eventing is arduous on a good day. So they'll have to do well, and the stars will have to align a little bit. Their guys are ready to go, and we'll definitely put in good shape.
And again, Chris, from a Tokyo 2020 perspective, that how the eventing team performs at Tryon is so important.
Critical, absolutely critical for us, Joe. We're a government-funded sport. We're the Australian Institute of Sport, invested in us significantly to get a result of Tokyo Olympic Games being medals, and so therefore qualifying at this event is really, really important. But once again, the guys are up for it. They've prepared well. They've put a lot of work into this, and now we just have to let the competition roll out.
And coming up next week at WEG, of course, we have the carriage driving, the legend Boyd Excel leading the charge for us there, and also the vaulting. And this week, our reiners performed as well as they could against the Americans, the home of reining, of course, the US. It was always going to be hard for them to feature in the top three.
Oh, really exciting story with the reiners, Joe. They're such a great group of people. They're professional in their approach. And we had Shauna and Mud Larkham, the brother and sister combination. And also we had the husband-wife combination in Robin and Warwick Schiller and followed by Dan James, a guy from Australia, a beaut horseman who who really put in a good show. But I think that the story of the day was Robin and Warwick, the husband and wife combination, where they pipped each other a couple of times. And I think Robin got ahead of her husband Warwick by half a point. And so they really lit up the crowd, and the Aussie support and the support for all the Australian competitors was alive and well at Triumph today. And so it was really exciting for those guys. And I can assure you they enjoyed a cool beer this evening as well.
And Boyd Excel, there'd be high expectations about how he's likely to perform.
Yeah, Boyd's arrived today. All five horses have come out of quarantine, are in fantastic condition. His team's done a beaut job in getting them organised. Boyd's just come off the back of a significant ankle surgery 4 weeks ago. He's a little bit light on his feet at the moment, but getting around in a golf cart and he's already setting this thing nicely to try and regain that gold medal performance that he's done five times before. So Boyd has a great presence about him. He's a consummate professional, an amazing horseman whose preparation is meticulous. And so we'll look forward to Boyd preparing this week and getting into competition next.
Okay. Well, Chris, well done on all that the Australian equestrian team has achieved thus far. How has the general atmosphere been at Triumph?
Oh, listen, there's no doubt there's been some challenges for the organising committee trying to get the venue finished and up to a standard of World Equestrian Games. But now that the competitors are here and the sport's started, the quality of facility that's been provided for competition is absolutely world-class, and there is a general good buzz about the place. There are a lot of people there today. There is no doubt there are an equestrian and horse-loving community and really, you know, buzzing to watch good competition. So lots of people there, very, very busy, and really, really good, exciting field, to be honest.
And by the looks and sounds of it, Chris, there have been many Australians travelled to Triumph to support the team.
Oh, the support from the Aussie fans has been amazing. We're in the dressage today, and I remember talking to Mary Hannah and her husband, Rob, and she actually said, you know, she's been to five of these, and it's the best support she's ever felt. And there's a lot of presence there, and they're very vibrant. And it's absolutely beautiful for our competitors to feel that. So, you know, as I said, lots of presents, lots of flags, and lots of Aussie. And it's been really, really great, actually. So I'm really proud of our competitors, and it's proud to be an Australian at big events like this, especially when we do well.
Chris, good luck for the second half and the second week of the World Equestrian Games at Triumph, and we'll look forward to touching base with you again at the conclusion. And fingers crossed for the remainder of our Australian competitors set to line up.
Thanks so much, Jo, and great talking to you.
That's Chris Webb, the Australian Equestrian Team's chef de mission, in charge of the team during the World Equestrian Games in Triumph in the USA.
Meeting the people shaping racehorse careers. We're going behind the stable door.
We're running out of things to say about Winx. Every time she steps out, she wins in dominant style. And there's such a backstory to this horse. One of the focuses this morning on Talking Horses is with the race caller, Darren Flindell, who sits in the lofty heights of the race caller's box each time she runs and probably has to think about what he's going to say in the days leading up. He's had to think about that a number of times now, and the challenge is changing it up. Darren, how are you this morning?
Yes, good morning to you, Joe. Always feel rather relieved the day after Winx goes around, because there's always a certain amount of pressure attached to calling the races that she runs in Sydney. And the days leading up, you just feel a little bit anxious in the hours leading up to the race. So once it's over, it is somewhat of a relief, but it's a nice pressure to have, I can tell you.
Mm. Well, you've been along for the ride now for a long time. What does she mean to you as a professional?
She's something you really look forward to weeks in advance when you know she's running, because you know it's going to draw a certain aura, a certain elevated crowd generally to the track on the day. Calling her in races is quite surreal, for the fact that there's no other horse that I've dealt with where you know in advance he's simply going to win. And you have to sit down and basically contrive some type of line that's worthy of the occasion that that lies ahead. And after you've done five, six, seven, eight, okay, but this is never-ending. You've got to come up with more material here than a Seinfeld producer.
But you've done well, Darren. I have to say, each time she runs, there is something quite momentous that you manage to say as she crosses the line.
Well, I try and make it different. I don't want to just keep saying, and the champ wins by four. Yeah, we're just trying to keep it something that in the years down the track, that when you do go back and watch these replays, and quite often there'll be shows where they're all back-to-back, and that's when it can become evident if the calls get a bit stale, that each race has to be made a little bit individual, a little bit unique, and I hope that in some way I've been able to achieve that.
Yesterday, again, she was so dominant, wasn't she?
Well, she was in the end. I had to say, just for a fleeting moment, when Le Romain made that strong move, and I was looking at Le Romain through the binoculars, and he really looked to be using himself and going very well at the time. And then I looked at Winks, and I certainly didn't panic, but I, just for a fleeting moment when she was two lengths behind and had egged hard on her inside, I just thought, how well is she actually going here? But I certainly didn't say anything, and I just sort of kept it to the fact that Winks has tooled two lengths behind, and then basically in three blinks of an eye there, Winks had drawn level, and then that trademark style where she just arrogantly palms them off and storms away and makes them look silly was just business as usual for her yesterday.
Mm. I had the privilege, like you, of being there yesterday to witness her 27th win in a row. How would you have described the atmosphere on course?
Well, it was a bit below expectations because I thought in the week leading up to the race, I'm trying to work out, will this be the last time we see Winks in Sydney? I'm not entirely sure because Chris Waller still hasn't committed to whether the next step will be the Turnbull in Melbourne or the Craven Plate. And, I mean, in my mind, I always assumed that the Cox Plate would be it. That would be the last hurrah. But the way she's going, she only just turned seven yesterday, the way she's going, perhaps they will press on for the autumn. For the fact that there was no particular fanfare at Randwick yesterday, for potentially what could be the last time we see Winks race, they must feel confident she will go on to the autumn.
But you can never be too confident in this business with horses involved. I mean, she's a very sound horse and all of that, but, you know, the ride is not going to last forever, unfortunately.
No, that's one thing about life that's absolutely guaranteed, and we certainly have to make the most of these opportunities. And I think it's a common expression in life, Joe. You've got to party up like it's your last day on earth. you would agree with that sentiment, wouldn't you?
Oh, very much so. Yes.
On the odd occasion.
I think we both attest to that theory. Darren, so what would you say is the highlight so far of Calling Winks? What's the race for you that really stands out?
I'd say it was the one that everybody thought she was going to get beaten in. And I have to say I nearly did as well. When she resumed in the Warwick Stakes in 2017, the race that's now known as the Winks Stakes, but she missed the start by five lengths or so, and it didn't seem to be a big deal at the time. But when the stablemate Fox Play was leaders back, and then Fox Play, the boom filly at the time, just shut up the inside and established a 3-4 length lead, and Winks was still so far back, and I think the call was things are going to get desperate, and then in the end she dives and she got up. For me, that was the most enjoyable because I didn't have to sit back and contrive any type of line. I didn't have to think about anything. I just had to call the race. And I think myself, like most, thought she was going to get beaten. Now, a race caller doesn't want to say can't win. I know Bill Collins has become famous for it with the Kingston Town call, and I think most callers in a big race are still mindful of that. It's in the back of your head. I was nearly tempted on the day to say I think the champ's in trouble, but I elected not to, which was a good move at the end. But I have to say, Joe, that was the call that I enjoyed calling the most because it was a proper race with that dramatic finish.
Mm. Well, you've been back in Australia now for a reasonable amount of time after being the head race caller for the Hong Kong Jockey Club. What a dream to return to Australian shores and have a horse like this emerge in front of you.
Well, I was disappointed the day I left Hong Kong. I called Able Friend for the last time, winning a Group 1 there, and my last call going past the post was, oh, I'm going to miss calling you, buddy. And there were many great horses there in Hong Kong. But to do that transition from Hong Kong to Sydney in a week, and then a couple of weeks later I called Chautauqua for the first time, called Winx getting beaten in the Oaks. That's the only time I've seen her get rolled. But after that, it's been 27 in a row since that day she actually was beaten by Gust of Wind in the Oaks.
Mm. Should the day ever occur, and I doubt it will, but God forbid if it does, that Winx would be defeated, from your perspective, how do you mentally sort of prepare for that, and how do you think you might handle that?
Well, I had often given that some thought, and there is sort of a line sort of stored there that I'll probably use if ever it's required. But yeah, how would I deal with it? It probably depends on who wins the race, whether it's an up-and-coming course. Like, for instance, if Kemantari had won two starts back, I think I would have handled that quite well. That would have illustrated what a superstar Kemantari was. But if she was to get all boxed up and couldn't get out of a pocket and a 150-to-1 shot horse that was just having a prep run won it, that would be a huge disappointment. But if it was an up-and-coming horse, I think I'd handle that quite well.
Mm. What an amazing journey it's been for Winx and for you as the commentator to guide us through all of her magnificent wins. If she was to go on and win a fourth Cox Plate, will you be there? Will you be able to take the day off calling in Sydney to witness that? Or what's your plan around potentially that tilt at the Cox Plate?
The roster for the date, I think it's October 28, Dee Flindell off. I'm already booked to go to Moonee Valley. A group of my schoolmates have made this a tradition for many years, and they've often said, why don't you do it? And I said, just knowing about... Once Winx decided not to go to Royal Ascot, I thought, OK, well, they'll stick on for the Cox Plate. I'll definitely join the boys. So, Joe, I'm really looking forward to just sitting there in Joe Public, in the Moonee Valley Grandstand, and just soaking up the atmosphere on the day. It's going to be something special.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for all your colourful calls thus far, Darren, and enjoy Cox Plate Day and having a day as a normal race goer for a change.
Yes, that's right. It's a rare treat for a day. Like watching the TV screens last year for the Cox Plate, and when the cameras were panning around Moonee Valley, I just couldn't see a vacant spot anywhere. It looked like every vantage position was taken. It's quite a crew that we're going down with, and they're not all big punters, so we're going to have to allocate a few of the boys just to sort of sit there and mind seats. So, you know that old tradition?
Well, enjoy it.
Will do. Thanks, Joe.
All right. That's Darren Flindell, head race caller for Sky Racing, who's had the privilege of calling Winx well into the journey now, and he'll enjoy Cox Plate Day this year when she goes for number four. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.